Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Morning.
Welcome to our WebEx meeting. Hope everyone is staying healthy and well. Roll call, please.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Debbie Berry.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Sure.
Please join us for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And I need a motion, subject to amendment, first for approving our regular meeting minutes of September 17th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And then a second motion, an amendment to the minutes of September 17th regarding Resolution 20-09-122. Rose, can you just?
Yes, this was just a, we've had a change of personnel. So one of our employees who's named in that resolution will be taking a new job. And so we wanted to amend that resolution to remove that authority that she would have to sign on our bank accounts.
Okay, thank you. So by interlineation, just a motion to approve as amended.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And our financial report, please.
Great, thank you very much. Good morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
Let's get loaded up here. Very good, thank you, David. This is reflective of our results through September 30th, so the end of third quarter. We can see here that on the property tax side, we did finally receive and post the second half of our real estate taxes. What is outstanding so far now is the last piece that remains, which is the homestead and rollback payment. According to the county, we should receive that by November 30th. It's significantly late. We received it August 31st last year. It tends to be August, late August, early September. So it continues to be a little bit delayed, but it's a timing item that we'll just have to carry until then, but we are going to get it.
Is there a reason for that? Was that their collections? Was it just they weren't able to process it as early, or do we not really know?
Right now, it's just everything is a little bit slower with them. They're on furloughed and reduced staff as well.
Sure.
The real estate tax piece was due to the delay in, or the pushback of the filing date. There's a 45-day extension granted, so that created the delay for the main portion of the second half of the real estate taxes. This is more just administrative processing related and reduced resources.
But we anticipate it would be the number that we're expecting, that it wouldn't be.
We do. It's going to be roughly $2.8 million, which is just what we were expecting. And then you can see what that'll do here is it'll put us about 500 grand better than where we were last year, which is very consistent with what we estimated early on.
Gotcha.
So we're not going to be out the money. It's just that we're carrying it for additional time. On the charges for services side, we are down about $8 million at this point from where we were last year. This number is slightly inflated by about $200,000, which is the payment that we owe to Tianyu, made in early October, but not booked in September to offset the revenue share that we have for the last portion of Asian Lantern Festival. And then we carry that down and we can see that that puts us at about $6.5 million under where we were last year. Important to note that we're offsetting that because our grants are about 4.1 higher. We've had some nice reimbursements from our Tiger projects that have been going on to a much greater extent this year, as well as some foundation activity this year. So we are that's timing between the 2 years, particularly related to Tiger, where we pushed some of that activity into 2020, and now we're seeing the reimbursements for that. When we jump down to our operating expenses, we've offset and created savings of about $12.1 million so far. 6.4 of that is through the cost-cutting measures we've taken relative to our furloughs and our personnel. And about 5.7 of that is relative to our operations and all of our respective cost control measures there. So what that allows us to do is come up with an operating surplus that's actually about $5.5 million better than last year, so we can continue to maintain and keep our parks safe through the capital side, which you can see is the $7.4 million has been spent through this period of time on capital and land acquisition than was last year. A lot of this, again, is related to our trail activity with the Tiger projects, and it's funded by, a large portion is funded by that additional grants and gifts and donations number up on top of the $4.1 million. So from a net perspective, three quarters through the year, we're about $1.9 million behind where we were from a net surplus perspective. Pretty good considering all the activity that we have going on and the challenges that we face this year. And it emphasizes the importance of us staying very cost conscious with all of our operations. When we look at the zoo, we can see that we're just about $4 million behind last year. And again, there's about $156,000 that is a payment that goes to Tianyu that'll reduce this number in October that we made in the first week of October. So it's slightly overstated right now, just based on the cash basis of accounting. And the zoo continues to be as careful as they can with operating expenses. Much more of their costs are fixed, but they have been able to save $2.5 million versus to spend last year on operations. So that puts the operating subsidy about $1.4 million greater than it was through September of last year. Our capital activity, you can see here, we're at about $1.6 million more than we were last year. And that puts us at a net subsidy position that's about $3 million greater than where we were in 2019. Moving over to golf, the story continues to be really pretty incredible. This $7.3 million that we see here for revenue through September, that is just shy of our budgeted number for this year. I think we budgeted 7.334, 332 for this year. We're almost $900,000 of where we were ahead of where we were last year. And through the first 2 weeks of October or so, we're at about $7.6 million in revenue for golf. So really tremendous number of rounds played. Nine hole rounds played is up about 28%. And the entire team continues to do a very good job also watching the spend. So we're actually spending just a touch less, 433 grand less than we did last year on operations. And when you consider the amount of additional revenue that we're supporting, that's really pretty impressive. And that puts our operating surplus at $1.3 million better than it was in 2019. We picked up another $225,000 just in the month of September. We've intentionally been a little light on the capital investment on the golf side this year. We made substantial investments, capital investments in the prior 3 years. So you can see here that we've done about $982,000 less in CapEx than we did in 2019. So this puts us at a net surplus of $2.5 million, which is $2.3 million greater than where we were last year. Now this will start to go, we're gonna continue to do what we've done in the past. We're gonna do some pre-buying at this year's rates for fungicides, insecticides, and pesticides. So we'll eat into this a little bit, but it's still significant performance for the whole golf division. They've really done incredibly well.
Is that uniform across the country? I mean, do you see that?
It's uniform across the state. I know that for sure. Ohio in general is up about 27, 26% the number of rounds played for the courses in Ohio. I don't know about the national figures.
I think it's a little bit of a ping pong. And the only reason I say that is some states closed and actually stayed closed for longer periods of time. So I don't know that you can rely on all of the data from when open to current. If they stayed open, the numbers are definitely up, but an overall trend, if you look at their trend for the year, they may be down because they would have been closed for 2 months. So it just depends on the ownership, the municipality, whatever it happened to have been. Each state has handled things very differently. We chose to stay open. Our teams really work on the social distancing side of things. Net revenue from outings and things are almost all gone. I think we maybe did one or two the entire year. But pro shop sales and services have all held their own really well. And Sean's team and all their general managers have kept the cost down to try to really help preserve as much revenue as we could this year.
Terrific.
This just shows us where we are with each respective course. The green again indicates that revenue and operating surplus are greater than they were at this point last year. The yellow indicates that one of those two indicators is greater. In this case, we're just a little bit behind on the operating surplus side of being met. Much of this is related to the timing of food and beverage and merchandise for resale. We did have to buy some additional food and beverage to support the activity that's going on the concession side of Big Met. And then you can see we are now over the $1 million threshold for five of our eight courses. So really just fantastic that already at the end of September, we're at this point. Moving to enterprise, again, this is a little bit more challenging for us in terms of what we've been able to do. Our revenue is down $3.8 million, just with closed concert series, closed concessions, closed revenues, many of the operations that we had to scale back for this year. We offset about $2.8 million of that, roughly 70% through our cost control measures. So it does put us about $977,000 different than where we were last year, where we were in a surplus position, and this year we're in a subsidy position at this point. And then as we carry that down, we're at about $938,000 difference after you take into effect capital activity. And we can see here not much change as we look at the performance across our respective divisions, or locations, I should say, excuse me. We've talked about what's affected each of these several meetings in a row, so I don't want to spend too much time on those right now, but you can see where we're at through September. And then we carry on through the remainder of our locations. Again, gray indicates not operating at the moment. Yellow indicates one of two indicators, revenue and or surplus is better than last year. And red indicates that both revenue and surplus are behind last year. And that is where we're at, unless there's any questions.
Delightful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian.
Morning, everyone. The first action item we have is the 2020 budget adjustment number 9.
Thank you, Brian. Budget adjustment number 9 is for $603,609. $263,000 of this is relative to the new NOPEC grant that handles insecticide plant material and tree planting. $62,000 of this is for additional credit card fees that are supported by the increased revenue over budget, particularly at the golf location. And $270,000 of this is for existing restricted funds that are going towards the Huntington Tower and $20,000 towards land purchases. So the recommended action for the Board of Park Commissioners is that we approve this budget number, budget adjustment number 9 for the total increase of $603,609 as delineated on pages 33 to 34.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is the request for approval for the 2021 rates and user fees. They are all listed in detail between pages 35 and 53. What's that?
Yes, Dave.
Very thorough. There are very few changes, a few cleanups along the way, but very few adjustments across the way.
Really, what is the walking?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same question.
What's that?
People walking across the fairways and they're going to get charged for.
Yeah, so the answer is and when we have events or tournaments and things for let's see, high school golf, there is a fee charged to walk along, because periodically people will then decide to pick up a golf club or do something like that. So there is a fee, and we do know who they are on the course from a liability standpoint.
I figured it was some kind of a regulatory. Cool. All right. What was it? I guess we need a motion.
Yeah, move the motion.
Second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is pilot number 6527, authorization for Cleveland Metro Parks to enter into a contract for the ice skating rink concessions. Again, Cleveland Metro Parks being more than 100 years old, we provide all sorts of different activities in and during the winter months. This is a unique opportunity, and it was with much debate to go back and forth between what this is an artificial ice surface versus a full on ice surface. I really wanted the full on ice surface, as did a lot of others. But when we looked at the cost ratio between full on ice and the inability for Cleveland's winters to stay consistent, we felt that that would be too much of a risk for the park district in its first year. So the pilot project is to bring in a artificial sheet of ice with skates and skate sharpeners and other things to provide a Riverfest type activity down at Merwin's Wharf. We will be putting it on the big concrete pad and including that into what we call the Riverfest with some igloos and some other things. So this again is just a pilot project. We're trying to see how people can stay socially distant and be still somewhat active outside at Merwin's Wharf.
Very creative.
Very creative. Would we charge for it?
There will be a cost recovery model in place. We're also looking at trying to secure some sponsorships along the way, really trying to create an opportunity for people to get out of their house, wear their mask, be socially distant outside, and to be able to have some recreation opportunities. It's interesting, in Cleveland, sometimes you get lots of snow, sometimes you get no snow, sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's not. So we just
sometimes
felt that this
in 24 hours.
the safest opportunity for the Park District to jump into.
So they will put this polymer down or whatever it is, and then will they maintain it with the oil and all that sort of stuff?
We actually do that.
You do that. And then at the end of the season, they take it back.
Yes, correct.
Very good.
But we won't own it. We'll just be leasing it essentially.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is the award of RFP 6502, Construction Manager at Risk for Services for Heritage Park 1 and Rivergate Boat Slips. Cleveland Metro Parks was awarded a big grant, boating infrastructure grant, through the Ohio Department of Natural Resources Division of Watercraft. This program funds both public and private agencies across the country. It is really designed to help provide some transient dockage for non-trailable boats greater than 26 feet in length. These federal funds are generated through the Sport Fishing and Boating Safety Act. Grant agreements are made with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and it's open to all navigable waters and coastal communities throughout the United States. Why I really wanted to highlight that is that's how competitive it is. We're up against the coastlines of the East and the West and the South, and we were able to secure two federal awards for the ability to construct these new transient docks for recreational boaters, 12 slips at Heritage Park number 1 and 6 slips at Rivergate Park.
That's impressive.
There is a match that will be required. Our team has vetted a number of firms. They shortlisted 3, and they came out with Shermer Construction as the highest and best fit. So we will be working to negotiate upon approval to award the contract to Shermer Construction. The action item falls on the mid portion of page 13 if there aren't questions.
Have each of the 3 firms given preliminary costs or not that far into it yet?
Not that far into it yet, because I think part of it is that the dynamic of the way Rivergate is laid out is a tad bit different than the way Heritage Park is laid out. So there may be 2 different approaches kind of looked at between the two different locations. So that's why bringing the construction manager at risk in will actually grow with them to make sure we can hit our budget numbers.
And these are just transient slips that you can have for a few hours, right?
Correct.
Not overnight.
I believe there is and Joe could answer that, but he's not in here.
Not important.
But I think there is a capacity for cost recovery, and it is short term, but not long term.
Right. Okay.
And will we have personnel there then when these are open working, or is it kind of an honor system or a pre-rental, or how does that work?
We are thinking that it may be a kiosk type opportunity.
Okay.
Or depending on, because Heritage Park 1 is 12, depending on how dynamic it is, how many boats would potentially be coming in, coming out, we may have some dockside service. Joe is coming in right now. He can fill you in on it. But that's, I think we're still debating what that looks like.
What's up, Doc?
Morning, Joe.
Morning.
You have to go to the microphone.
Yeah, so I think Brian was answering it when I was coming down the hall. Any and all of those, we're debating which way is the best way to recover costs and to staff them. So maybe on our system, there are some prepackaged software approaches where people can register from their phone. They get there, they have a code, they punch it in, the gate opens and closes, their boat is secure on the dock, or staffing it seasonally with somebody during certain hours. You know, and that gets complicated with overnights and things like that. So we're working through all those different scenarios, and we'll hope to have that rolled out in the next probably month or so.
It will be important with respect to people using the restaurant in for this, to have them know that they have a place that they can put their boat. So before they start way up the river.
Yeah, we'll for sure have some sort of app or pre slip registration process where we get their name and time and date and all of that ahead of time. So that'll be for certain. But what can you pay through the app? You know, who watches your boat? What is the level of security? We're working through all of that right now.
And then overnight should be, you know, $2 a foot. I mean, it should be a lot.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Very good. If there's nothing else, move.
No, this is great. It's good to have.
Yeah, very nice. Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Joe. The next action item is the authorization of the East Branch Rocky River Preservation Project. This continues on. This is an acquisition of the UTEF property and in Hinckley Reservation, the Williams property in the Brecksville Reservation.
Pull up the maps, please.
Yes, we will pull the maps up.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Very good. So Hinckley Reservation is now, actually Stephanie's here. Why don't we have Stephanie come in?
Okay.
We'll grab Stephanie. Stephanie's team and Kyle put this all together, so we will highlight them. But these are two Clean Ohio projects. They are in two different districts, NREC districts. And so this one is the UTEP property, and you'll get to see the Williams property as it relates to Brecksville and the Brecksville corridor. Two very unique projects.
So they're totally separate grant applications.
Yes, based on the two different NREC districts.
Got it. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning. So yeah, just a little bit of background. These are both two properties that are located along the east branch of the Rocky River. One is more in closer relation to Hinckley and Hinckley Township, and it is just north of the Robb property, which we recently acquired through a Clean Ohio grant. So we've been working with this landowner for a number of years, and it was kind of tied up in an estate. So now she's ready and willing to sell. And we had the property appraised, and it is, you know, ready to go forward with the Clean Ohio application. And we thought we'd pair it with the other east branch of the Rocky River property, the Williams property, which is closer to Brecksville Reservation, in an effort to maximize funding. So the Clean Ohio funding would be to two different districts, District 1 and District 9. And then we would also pair the project together to apply for additional funds through the Land and Water Conservation Fund. So we're, you know, just looking for a way to maximize funding to acquire both properties. You can see one is 75 acres in North Royalton, and the other is 52 acres in Hinckley Township.
A little bit of connectivity working there.
Right, we're trying to continue the connection up there from Hinckley Reservation up to Brecksville, and then as well from Millstream Run Reservation down to Hinckley Reservation.
Slow and steady.
Yep.
Yeah, excellent.
Move the motion here.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Thank you very much. We will see where the NREC districts go. As Stephanie leaves, and we will be inviting Greg Headley in, just to quickly cover the 2021 property and liability insurance coverages in RFP 6514-B.
Morning.
Good morning. Hi, it's that time of year again. Talk about insurance, such a fun day. A bit of history, if you recall, 3 years ago we had an RFP went out to bid for our property and liability insurance coverage. At that point, we made a switch from Jackson Deacon and Tokyo Marine HCC as our insurer and broker to Highland and Travelers as our broker and insurance combination. At that time, in the first year alone, we realized about $150,000 in savings on premiums. So that was really good coverage and great premium pricing. Fast forward 3 years, of course, we have another RFP this year. So we went out to bid again. We had two proposers this year that came through with bids for us. We had our incumbent, once again, Highland and Travelers, and Jackson Deacon and Tokyo Marine HCC also bid this year. So when the proposals came in, you know, obviously we did our analysis to look at the coverages, of course, and the premiums. The premiums were pretty far apart this year. Travelers came in at about $803,000 in premium for this policy period. Jackson Deacon and Tokyo Marine HCC came in at $705,000 in premium. So we're looking at about $100,000 difference in between the two. Still wonderful coverages. We know Jackson Deacon and Tokyo Marine HCC, of course, because they were our incumbent before. Great coverage there as well. And really, when you look at the Tokyo Marine HCC proposal of the $705,000, it's actually $20,000 less than we're paying currently for this year. So not only are we seeing that savings with regard to the proposals, it's a really lucky for us kind of that we had this RFP this year, or else we would be paying an extra $80,000 in premium had this just been a renewal. So obviously our recommended action would be that we would switch back to Jackson Deacon and Associates as our broker and Tokyo Marine HCC as our insurer.
Excellent.
Any questions?
No question.
Oh, that's good news.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah, I just wanted to publicly thank Greg for all of his hard work on that RFP. Greg has been our point person on the COVID-19 issues and all the policies and orders and all the risk management issues that have come up. And then to do the RFP for the insurance, it's been a very busy year. Greg, thank you for all the hard work.
Could have done it without the team, Brian and Rose and our legal folks and everybody really in the park district. It's been trying times. It's been difficult, but I think we're doing really well right now. So thank you very much.
To say nothing about, I mean, saving $100,000 isn't chump change either.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
That concludes the general action items, the tabulation of award and bids. Recommended action to award bid number 6381, the testing and repair of backflow preventers and emergency water systems, Ohio Sourceable Co-op 125.04, for 6 vehicles for the Park District, and then bid number 6524, printing and mailing services. Those all can be found correlated on page 20 for the recommended action.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Vouchers and payroll.
Vouchers and payroll. The following vouchers have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code, totaling $9,068,643.04. And the recommended action is that the commissioners approve this resolution number 20-10-131.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public comments.
Okay, we're ready for public comment. Marty, if you have your mic on, you should be ready to go.
Can you hear me?
We have some echo on the line, Marty. Sorry. Can you mute your computer, please?
Are you experienced?
You okay now?
No, still got a lot of echo.
I feel like we're in a fishbowl.
Could there be two microphones on?
No, I do not have a microphone on my computer, so this is the phone only.
Sounds better.
Okay.
He just keeps talking.
I think that you can proceed, Marty.
Okay, I'll try. At the last meeting, Brian took pains to point out that the latest expenditure for the Whiskey Island waterline are being paid by the city of Cleveland. Elsewhere during that same meeting, you were touting regionalism. So let me remind you that other people's money you are busy assembling is merely other tax dollars being collected and doled out by different agencies. Whether it is Metro Parks levy dollars or Sandy FEMA dollars or City of Cleveland dollars, it all came from taxpayers' pockets, and all taxpayers deserve to have payments closely monitored. Also, I did not hear a response to my questions regarding golf's expenses. Can you confirm that when employees are loaned or used by a different department, that their salaries are charged back to, in this case, golf? Obviously, this is required for the bottom line to be credible. The estimated $16 million shortfall mentioned previously is somewhat confusing. If levy funds are expected to be down less than $2 million, enterprise bottom line down less than $1 million, zoo subsidies needs an additional $3 million, and golf is actually up, then what accounts for the roughly $10 million additional difference? Perhaps this is obvious, but explanations are always helpful. It is certainly welcome news that the outdoor ed will be starting back up. Too bad we're near the end of the pleasant fall weather when folks have been streaming into the park and could have been absorbing knowledge from the real world. Latest forecasts sound like the cooling temps may be more suited to your ice skating idea. Hard to picture, though, how social distancing will work in that scenario, and not certain there's enough demand to make it pay off. People do want to get out and do things, but Public Square will be direct competition, or UCI, for Eastsiders. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comments? We good? You want to?
Sure, I can address the golf question. Because of the impact of sharing staff and the amount of time to reallocate that, we have not, for loan staff, we did not take them out of their departments and assess them to the golf numbers. Those numbers shouldn't be in excess of a couple hundred thousand dollars out of that significant surplus that we have there. But we've kept them in their respective departments because it's That shared basis is as needed at the courses, and it changes. It can change days. It can change hours. So rather than trying to move around all that money, we made the decision that we were not going to do that for purposes of the shared staff this season. I'm not quite sure what the question was on the second part from Marty. I feel as though we are doing a very good job explaining what's happening with the numbers from the year-over-year perspective. So if there's a misunderstanding about that, perhaps that could be asked in a way that's a little bit easier to follow, because I didn't follow it.
Any other comments?
I think also just to address the staff movement, the staff has moved all over. I mean, Karen's been out. I mean, we've had people that have had to move sometimes at a moment's notice to cover things. So I'm not sure exactly. I mean, there may be, you know, an administrative charge that we charge into it, you know, for a number, for an accountability side of things. But in general, it's the amount of people that we've had to move throughout the entire park district. We've moved folks from the zoo out, we move people in. So we've constantly had to be very dynamic to be able to survive this. So I'm not sure how a few $100,000 is going to change those numbers.
Ultimately, ultimately that comes down to our bottom line anyways, our overall budget, right? Which is obviously what we're working to.
They're all one.
Right.
At the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's the underlying or the overarching point is that we have an operation, an organization that has a management approach and a buy-in by everyone who works here that, yeah, we're all in this together, and people adapt. And it's not always easy. And yet what you've accomplished collectively is huge. It's very impressive. So really a credit to everyone in the organization.
Thanks, Bruce.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yep. Our information. Yeah, thank you.
Yep, information briefing. We will invite Sean in and Sarah to cover the planning for the West Side Trail connections.
Morning.
Morning.
Happy trails.
I think it's off, Sean.
Before you start.
Never, he touched it.
Before you start, too, just so the general public knows, there's no more than 10 people in the room at this point in time as well.
Hi, good morning, commissioners. As a follow-up to our presentation from last month where we talked about the East Side Trails, today we're talking about West Side Trails and just projects that are happening on the West Side, just more as an update. And same as last month, we have major planning efforts that are guiding our work, including our master plans, but also the Cuyahoga Greenways Plan is a huge piece of our guiding documents for trail development. And then we have some additional studies that are underway, like the Community Confluence Transportation for Livable Communities Initiative project that is looking at Rocky River Reservation and Three Bridges crossing it, as well as some upcoming studies that we'll touch on just very briefly, including the Cuyahoga County Lakefront Public Access Study. And again, we're going off of the Cuyahoga Greenways Plan, which identified critical gaps and regional links that are important to the overall system of trails for the county. And we'll be talking a little bit about the Tiger projects and update on them, Lake Avenue, opportunities there, the entrance to Rocky River Reservation at Sloan and Detroit and Valley Parkway. We're also talking about the Mastic Road area and or Mastic Road Bridge and the Connector Trail, as well as Old Lorraine Road. Again, the Community Confluence Study and then lakefront plans that are underway.
Thanks, Sarah. Good morning, commissioners.
Morning.
So I wanted to walk you through quickly some progress on the Tiger Trails. So Wisconsin Connector, Red Line Greenway, Windy Park Bridge, and our downtown connectors. Happy to report we've made some great progress. We're looking at the Whiskey Island Connector here, looking east towards downtown in both of these photos. These are now just a few days old. If you were to go out there today, you'd see that where we are in front of the Cleveland Bulk Terminal with the port and the lake to our left, we have now today the fence complete. This is a big milestone because we've now completed all the waterline work. and we've now moved the fence down to the toe slope. We're leaving the fence up at the top of slope so we don't invite too many folks into the construction zone. But eventually, and in fact, very soon, we will see that pesky fence along Whiskey Island Drive removed. In the matter of weeks, we will have a good majority of the Whiskey Island Connector Trail paved. Great progress. We've got a lot of work going on right now behind Westerly Wastewater Treatment Plant. It is challenging. Many utilities, some not where they were supposed to be. Shocking. So we're working through those challenges daily, if not hourly, on how we're going to accomplish actually constructing the trail back there.
Are you?
How wide is that trail, Sean?
This is a 10-foot wide paved trail.
Have you come up over that big sewer arrangement yet?
We are working on installing the footers for that pickable or movable bridge that flies over the sewer junction.
Okay.
The answer is that there's lots of things in the ground where our footers want to be, so we're having to renegotiate.
Yeah,
exactly.
In the ground.
Right, right.
Yeah, it has been a movable Rubik's Cube, if you will, which is been a challenge, but we're going to get over it. Wendy Park Bridge, great progress here, where we have, this is a picture of the south approach, the spline, as we call it, or the pigtail, and we're just about done constructing the approach. We've got both Pier 1 in the background, Pier 2 in the foreground constructed. We're looking north in this photo in the lower right-hand corner of the page here. We are expecting shipment of the prefabricated portions of the bridge from Minneapolis here in several weeks. The big challenge that we're working with the railroad on is the final details of exactly how we construct the bridge over the tracks and track time. We are pushing like mad to get track time. It is their busy season. So we are working with them constantly on the details of exactly how and where we set up the cranes and how the pieces parts go together of the bridge.
So you're going to be able you'll be able to lift the whole thing on at once, or do you have to, you're going to have to build pilings underneath it?
We are doing about six different sequences to lift the bridge. And we do have approval from the railroad to build a temporary pier in the middle of the main span.
Okay.
So the main span that goes over the railroad tracks is 250 feet. We've got approval to build a pier. The real trick right now is the arch portion of the bridge, how we literally fly them from different sides of the railroad track, meet them in midair, splice them, and set them on the bridge. Those are the details we're working through.
You splice them on the abutment you build in the middle, right?
We will actually splice the arches in air at the connection point and set them on the abutments. And it's those details that we're working through with the railroad.
How much time are they going to have it?
90 minutes maximum. And we can do it. We need the conditions to be right. We need wind. We have developed a logistical flow chart that is down to 5-minute increments that shows exactly how the process will be executed. And we have in there two different go, no go moments, with a half hour being one, an hour being another. And if we don't hit those moments, we have to retract and then try again at another time. It is, it's complicated, but we're working through it.
Based on their schedules, not on weather.
Yeah, it's both. We are, I don't want to say we're at their mercy because we're pushing like mad for them to give us the time, but we need to be given that outage in order to make that pick happen for the arches. And that's the most complicated of them.
Who's the contractor that's going to do this?
Thankfully, Great Lakes Construction. They're working, their sub who is working on the erection sequence is Youngstown Bridge, who has a lot of good experience with the railroad. We've got the right team on this. It doesn't mean that it's not complicated.
Sure.
But we're working through.
When do you think the bridge will be done?
We're still going to be done next spring. I mean, we will be done and ready and open next spring. It's right now, the fungible point is when exactly do we get to set it?
Yeah, right. I see.
Okay. Wow.
Yes, that's...
So by spring, so that would be, like if were to have a bunch of parties, then would that be May or would it be April?
The theme song is going to be, I've been working on the railroad.
based on everything that we know right now, we're trying to hit our deadline so that we can keep construction moving. And, you know, as we're managing through a global pandemic, it's a challenge in a lot of different ways. So, you know, the team really has, you know, minute by minute, things have changed on this particular project, just in order to get, you know, all the approvals and things that we need to do. And some of the, we've now been able to map a lot of the underlying utilities that didn't necessarily have maps to them before. So we've helped out a lot of different folks where things are.
Is that proprietary? We get feed for that?
We'll see. We can figure out how to monetize.
It will come in handy in the future. Yes. Any more questions on Wendy Park Bridge?
No.
Thank you. Moving on to Red Line Greenway and Knock on Plastic. Things have gone very smoothly as of late with Red Line. You can see here in the upper left-hand corner, this is the connection to the Red Line from Franklin. We've got a crosswalk just about done. Hoople's is off the corner to your left, and the retaining wall on the other side of the RTA abutment is now complete. Upper right-hand corner, you can see that we have our connection, ADA connection to Abbey. You've got Lorraine Avenue in the background there. And then lower right-hand corner, this is actually paved now, but this is a section of trail along I-90 just to the west of West 44th, between 44th and 53rd. And then in the lower left-hand corner, this is the famous catenary tree. You can see that it is still living and healthy. And this catenary exists on the trail below Abbey Avenue, just to the west of Abbey Avenue. And we're actually going to take some opportunities on the trail to create a little stopping point, because this is just a really neat urban feature about how that tree has fought and fought to live through a structure such as that.
So is that inside the structure?
It is literally inside the structure. That's inside amazing. Of the catenary. So we've worked really hard to protect it. And then already completed and getting great use, the connector trails down in the flats that have been opened since last year. Moving on from Tiger and looking to the future. So we always like to think globally, nationally in this case, and what we're pushing for here is execution of the national corridor plan when it comes to bike routes and bike ways. When we look a little closer here, and we're going to concentrate obviously up on Cleveland and the west side, we've got two statewide bikeway systems that have a confluence here on the west side of Cleveland, probably a little hard to see, but routes 30 and 130, and we're working on executing small portions of that system. So with that specifically, Lake Avenue. We've seen here recently some really good progress, and we have the opportunity for more. So the County Greenways plan calls Lake Avenue a regional link. So very, very important. It shows up on many plans for many decades about the importance of having a continuous and contiguous lakefront bikeway. With that, Lakewood has done what hopefully is the first of some great work there in seeing the execution of the lakefront bikeway on Lake Avenue itself. There are now dedicated bike lanes throughout, I'd say 80% of the municipality. They start at Webb Road and go, actually, there's a section on Clifton, then they take you through neighborhood on neighborhood streets, and then all the way on Lake Road up to Cove, which is just about 800 feet short of the municipal boundary with Cleveland. That's important. We'll bring that back up in a second. There are now efforts to repave Lake Avenue from its intersection with Detroit all the way to that municipal boundary. And with that, there has been a small section of planning done for that portion of Lake Road between Detroit and Clifton. And the city is looking to institute some of the recommendations from that plan, including bike lanes. This is important. It serves the neighborhood in and around Edgewater Park. Where the opportunity lays is in the portion of Lake Avenue that is part of this repaving project from West Boulevard to West 117th. And right now it's a pretty narrow roadway, and it serves a lot of on-street parking for multifamily uses. So you can't really accomplish on-street bike lanes because of the demand and need for parking. What then exists is an opportunity on the North Tree Lawn that's 24 to 26 feet wide to then transition what is today an existing 4 to 6 foot sidewalk to an all-purpose trail, thus linking you to the border with Lakewood, and then you're only a short stone's throw from connecting to the bike lanes at Lake Road. So we've got this opportunity. We have we have Cuyahoga County now, who has presented some interest in partnering with us in the city of Cleveland on adding to the repaving project on Lake Avenue and bringing to it the ability to construct that trail along Lake Avenue, connecting Edgewater Park here at West Boulevard all the way to West 117th. And then we'd work with Lakewood on that small portion here. So they want to bring this project to construction. It is funded for late 2021. It's fiscal 22. So we're working hard on the details to have this component added to the project.
Have they done community meetings with those residents?
Not yet on this specific idea, but there has been a lot of discussion overall, especially with the Cuyahoga Greenways plan, about the corridor and about Lake Avenue being the exact corridor. But because this, we'll say it, I'll just say it openly, the repaving project was added to the transportation improvement plan in a bundle of projects and is being pushed in terms of schedule. So if, I mean, we want this to happen, but we need to get in front of it and meet with residents. But we wanted you to know that this is a possibility before those conversations start.
That's like the only answer, but it also can be done, it looks like it, without impacting any of those trees, making a 10-foot all-purpose.
There,
trees are beautiful.
There are 53 tree lawns, there are 51 trees, and we can do the work without impacting a single, we do the work carefully, but no trees would have to come down.
John, who owns the tree lawn?
It is public right-of-way. City of Cleveland owns the right-of-way, a part of the Lake Avenue right-of-way. So it is, in essence, publicly owned.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, that doesn't mean there's not going to be opposition.
Right. So does the tree lawn stop person on the resident side of the tree of the sidewalk?
Technically, the right-of-way, so if we look at the picture in the upper left-hand corner, the right-of-way is on the resident side of the sidewalk. That's where the right-of-way line would be. Well, of course.
How do you mean? What do you mean?
No, I'm being facetious. Yeah, it's just legally. People are very possessive of their front yards. And so having public land doesn't change attitudes. And we have good examples in my former community to that effect. People just, it's a change. And to Debbie's point, having buy-in. And you both have dealt, we've all dealt with it. It's just part of the process.
Yeah.
What would be the timeline then? I'm sorry, I missed, or the hopeful timeline, assuming that they could get what they needed to move forward.
End of next summer, likely construction start.
Wow.
It's rather quick. Again, we're trying to add.
I imagine this. Visually, it could look very, very compelling. Oh, I mean, I would think the eye candy, the aesthetic of it, could be something very pleasing to people.
It absolutely can be. And in fact, what we're working right now, because of the nature, this would be very unique. We have portions of the towpath that literally at people's front door. That's more of an urban setting. And this is a little different in terms of lot size and spacing. So we're looking at the cost estimates right now, potentially doing this in concrete. So it looks more and feels more like a sidewalk. And we feel that that could be an important component to the residents.
And Lake Avenue, Lake Avenue is narrow and it's in absolutely horrible shape. I mean, you can wreck your bike.
But it's a beautiful street.
It's a lovely street. But
it is.
And the bike lanes in Lakewood have been remarkable. I mean, they're incredible. The use is amazing.
Yeah.
I think there's a community that buys in more than most.
But one of the things, Sean, I noticed on that one slide you had back a ways, where you had the bike lanes on both sides of the street. I was just exploring around Pittsburgh on a bicycle, and they'll have a one-way street, and then they'll have the bicycles going both ways on one side. And I think the one side may make a little more sense.
We have in the instance of West 65th Street, we advocated strongly to the city of Cleveland to institute a cycle track because of that important connection from Edgewater to the Red Line Greenway, to Michael's Own Rec Center, and to the zoo. And unfortunately, It was not seized upon. And you know, we continue to advocate. We work with Bike Cleveland on almost every project in terms of advocacy. They're supportive of this. It is easier to do on a one-way street. It's harder to have a cycle track on a two-way unless you have tremendous right-of-way. Lorraine Avenue is going to see a cycle track from West 65th to West 25th. We push as hard as we can on those certain projects when we have a voice, and we'll continue to do so. It's just not always
easy. Do you have a database to support those arguments?
We do have the data. Bike Cleveland is fantastic at putting together the data. I'll be honest, what we're finding is sometimes the projects administered from the city of Cleveland don't go through a robust programming process to incorporate all of the plans that exist for an area. So we're playing catch up a lot of times, and it is sometimes that's problematic.
Sean, my point was, if there's room for a bike path on both sides of a two-lane road,
mm-hmm.
There's generally going to be more room for cars if you put the bikes on together, so they're going both ways. So you don't use six and a half feet for each, but use a little less than that, a little less than 12 feet for both, if you see what I mean.
We agree. And the case by case dynamics of each of these projects, some would completely support what you're advocating for, and we agree. Others, there are reasons maybe it's better to separate the bike lanes and have directional. In this specific instance on Detroit, in the section between Clifton and Detroit, we think it's okay that the bike lanes are directional on each side. Uh-huh. because we can go back to the cross section real quick, but they still have parking, so they're able to execute the parking on one side of the street here.
Yeah.
The good thing is there aren't a lot of turning movements on that section of roadway, so you don't need a center turn lane. You could have eastbound, westbound, and then a buffered bike lane on each side.
And just as a clarifier, this is other taxpayer money. This isn't Cleveland Metro Parks money. That's
right.
Any more questions? And we wanted to bring this to you now because these things are the opportunity popped up 2 weeks ago. And before the conversation start with the neighborhood.
You're doing the best you can. That sounds very good. That's really
good. Right.
Yes. Thank you. Seizing opportunity. Valley Parkway and Detroit Sloan. This is the intersection of Valley Parkway. In essence, the north terminus of Emerald Necklace Trail and Lakewood here. Lakewood came to us. They have a mix of, I believe, state and federal funding for roadway reconstruction and utility replacement. And what a great opportunity. They have asked us to partner on this project that brings the all-purpose trail up from the valley floor and connect it into the West End Business District. But what's very important about this is they have a very well-used RTA station right here at the corner of Detroit Extension in Detroit. So what this does for us effectively is it increases our ability for multimodal access to the park. In addition to that, we also have the ability for a portion of reconstruction and literally connecting our all-purpose trail deeper into a neighborhood and a business district. We'd love to see this happen in many places. City of Lakewood came to us asked for a contribution of $25,000 for this to occur, which is, we think, a very reasonable request. With that, we get the top portion of Valley Parkway reconstructed. The city is then looking to institute some improvements. They're going to put the intersection on a road diet. That's a very wide intersection right now with very long crosswalks. They're going to skinny up the radius, the radii on all corners, and have some public elements at each corner. You can see here in the plan that the southwest corner, at least in this plan, is a little stark. That's because they left it up to us to decide what we'd like to do on that corner. So we've got some ideas that we're in concept stage. Right now, this entrance, sorry.
They're actually talking about moving the curb out because right now they have
improved sight lines for turning movements. And meanwhile, you get the extra space to play with.
Correct. They are They've already done a kind of try it campaign, if you will, with exactly. That has worked. It's worked well. And so now they're looking to take things to the next step, tightening the curbs, increasing some of those view lines and distances. We have the ability here to dress up what is, I think we can say, maybe a little tired, doesn't really celebrate the gateway of that entrance into the Emerald Necklace and to the Rocky River Reservation. We've got some improvements there that you know, we'd like to see dressed up a bit. So we've come up with some concepts. We're going to continue to develop these to celebrate where we are in the park district and also act as a really cool trailhead. So we're looking at a plan view here of some decorative concrete and benches, interpreting the Emerald Necklace itself.
That's a great idea.
Doing that on the concrete and at the same time having interpretive panels. This is a resting point. I know that I personally, I'm here a lot. You see a lot of people come up to the hill and they're gassed. And they need a place to rest and recharge or enter. So we're looking at, and in this obelisk, we have kind of a placeholder here. We're looking at some different concepts to grab people's attention and provide kind of a celebration point for the top of the hill. So
how many partner government agencies?
Well, we've got probably four, if you're looking at everyone involved here, with City of Lakewood being the strongest. But between Rocky River, City of Lakewood, the county having obviously interest in this through the community confluence, which Sarah will talk about, and this is really partnership in action.
So we'll be pulling other government dollars all together to make this project work.
You are spot on, Brian. Exactly. Okay, sorry, any more questions on Lakewood, Sloan, and Detroit?
Timeline for that? Or yeah.
Timeline is construction starting middle, end of next year. Awesome. The improvements that we are doing probably come at the end of that project.
More question, I'm sorry. Where did Lakewood get all their money from? Is it from Lakewood themselves, or did they get a federal grant or anything?
I believe they did get, it was either federal or state money, and then they are then using some local money for the water mains, some of the utility work. I mean, they're doing it the smart way. They're not just doing the pavement.
Right.
They're going to be redoing the infrastructure as well.
Yeah, there's been a lot of folks looking at that. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yes. Old Lorraine Access Study, I'll speed up a bit here. We are working with funds provided by the City of Cleveland, $50,000, to look at how better, to provide better access to the Cam's Corner neighborhood. Our walk bike shed, you can see here that this is a pretty small area of that half mile biking ability when you've got an entrance point right here. So we want to increase that. We also want to increase our park score in this area. The access down from the valley is one that has been challenged for a while. The safety along Lorraine Road here from a bike and ped standpoint, this is the, I don't want to use the word dangerous per se, but this is the eighth, in terms of ranking, eighth highest, if you will, challenge spot in Cuyahoga County for bike and ped. So we want to see that improved. We've done master planning here to show that we want to strengthen that connection to Old Lorraine Road. And again, what's old is new. These are back from Stinchcomb and plots from 1915 and 16, looking at this exact issue of how do we get down to the valley. We did it for vehicles. Now it's time to do it for bike and ped. The City of Cleveland has provided $50,000 for this study, which has been put to very good use. We're not done yet, but we are developing concepts here and working with the Cleveland Clinic and Fairview Hospital. And today, once we show this to you, then we'll start some neighborhood outreach. With that, we think we've found a way effectively to get down to the valley, both providing access to residents and hospital guests, visitors, and employees. In doing so, this is not easy. It's challenging. It's probably, you know, a million plus type of project, if not more, where we can minimize ecological impact, but yet find a route for bike and ped down into the valley. And like I said, we'll start to go out and get some public feedback on this, but exciting steps forward that then we can set this project hopefully up for grants and other funds.
Sean, you think that road's $1 million?
About the road.
Yeah, we're talking about the trail.
Yeah.
And it's.
Now, what's the nearest way to get down on the floor, on the valley floor, from that spot? The closest one now.
So if you're in a vehicle, you've got Lorraine Road off here, just off the map. You would take Old Lorraine Road, and that itself is a little treacherous because of the pavement conditions. So that is probably the easiest way in a vehicle. The thing is, if you're on foot, you're either taking, yeah, you're either in the road or you're crossing the Lorraine Road Bridge. Excuse me?
You can't vacate it because you need the access.
It's very much a hot button issue in that particular neighborhood. One part of the city of Cleveland wanted to shut it down. The other one wanted to enhance it. That's why we got brought in to help kind of manage the city of Cleveland's funding to really look at this. That's why we're really looking at trying to reposition the trail and rebuild the road, because if not for Old Lorraine, there's really no access point for vehicular traffic.
That's what I was wondering.
You have to go north and south quite a distance.
So it's too convenient. It's just.
There are times if the helipad has issues at the hospital where Tyler Field acts as the backup.
So it's also an emergency route.
Correct. So Old Lorraine is important.
It's not an option.
And it's right next to Little Neck Golf Course. So.
Yes. So this is probably much, I don't want to say much, it's definitely more than $1 million project when you think about the walls and the grades and.
Because it's slope and you've got to be able to hold the structure.
Yes.
Although I love that overlook.
But it'll be dramatic.
Yes, it will be very dramatic and fun and really cool. Okay, I'm going to hand the disinfected controller back to Sarah.
Still learning. So the Mastic Road Bridge project, you all heard about this when we put in for the Clean Ohio grant. It was actually earlier this year. The word is that they're still hoping to have Clean Ohio funding for this round, but no determination has been made yet. ODNR is going through and scoring the applications in hopes that funding does come through, but it is a little bit in question whether it'll be funded this year. But what we were doing with this was the Mastic Road Bridge project was going forward with Cuyahoga County. We've been working with them for several years, along with the city of Fairview Park, to plan for this once in 50, 7,500 year opportunity to get access into the valley as part of a bridge project. So they're redoing the bridge. It's actually moving along very quickly. It should be done here by the end of the year or early next year. And so we designed in, as part of this project, an all-purpose trail into the deck of the bridge. And then we have the Clean Ohio funding asked to build the rest of the trail that would link up on the north or the uphill side and then downhill side of the bridge. So this is the bridge construction, just some pictures over the course of the last several months. And then that was just from about a week or so ago. And so you can see the bridge deck and where the trail is on the side here. And actually, let me just back up a little bit here. So when I had that first slide of the Cuyahoga Greenways plan, we participated in the Cuyahoga Greenways initiative as an outgrowth of the Cuyahoga Greenway Partners group. And that was a multifaceted group that came together about 5 or 6 years ago, realizing that there's a lot of planning efforts that are going on for trails and connectivity, but they weren't really joined in together. And so a group of planners that are in kind of the regional sphere, so RTA, county, city of Cleveland, major cities, us, we came together and decided we have to kind of get everything out on the table and figure out how we prioritize these connections so that we're not building little pieces here and there. And that resulted in the Cuyahoga Greenways plan, which was funded through NOAACA and the county and us. And that's kind of the basis. We're doing that large level planning and getting it filtered down. So all of our decisions are predicated on a larger plan. And so we're fitting in. It's like a puzzle that we're putting one piece in at a time. So that's just kind of important to put out there. And along with that is also getting ahead of when are there major infrastructure projects going on? When are roads being redone that we can do all these enhancements and utility work and everything so that we are utilizing public dollars the best way that we can.
Yeah.
We're layering things on. We're doing it the correct way.
Yeah.
And so
infrastructure, you can improve it.
Right. And that's been a concerted effort of many partners, and a strong shout out to NOAACA for funding that project and seeing the broader picture of we need to have more of a... Yeah, yeah. And also Cuyahoga County, because they've been kind of staffing the Cuyahoga Greenway partners and leading a lot of this effort. So just wanted to kind of elevate that. So that's enabling projects like this to come. Yeah, that's enabling projects like this to come together. So getting back onto the planning side, community confluence, we have the overall Cuyahoga Greenways plan. We also work with our neighboring park districts to make sure that we're connecting outside of our county. But you still need some detailed studies that zoom in greater context than what the Cuyahoga Greenways can do. And so that's where the community confluence study comes through. It's looking at Lakewood, Rocky River, and access into the Rocky River Reservation. There are bridges that connect these areas. They were definitely designed for vehicles and not for people, so they can be a bit of a barrier. And that's one of the things that this study was really looking at. It is underway right now. You can see there's quite a few partners on the logo bar on the bottom, but we are working. It is a TLCI study through NOAACA with County Planning, Lakewood, and Rocky River. And so you can see just some of the major arteries and access points and where the study is headed in terms of recommendations. There has been a good amount of planning that's occurred in Lakewood and Rocky River through master planning efforts and the like. So this isn't recreating those. It is adding the best parts of all of those together. And again, looking more comprehensively of stitching the two communities together and access into the park as well. And then focus area, this ties in the gateway element and the reconstruction of the Sloan and Detroit and Valley Parkway intersection there, just on the other side of the bridge, and some other elements throughout that would will layer on to create a more walkable, more bikeable, and more connected area within Rocky River and Lakewood. And so this is the existing condition with Detroit Bridge. You can see it's a lot of pavement. It's very, very wide, and it's not the most inviting. And that's my little guy walking across the bridge. He was very disappointed. I was telling him we were going to see the water, and then I realized he can't see the water. It's not, there's a lot of really interesting things to look at, and it could be a much better space, especially given all the room that you have on Detroit. And so there's ways that we can utilize the existing infrastructure and enhance it and make it more of a quality of life, and also to better connect these business areas, because you've got the west end of Lakewood, you've got downtown Rocky River, and they're separated by a bridge. And that's, there are people that cross right now, but it could be much more porous. And that's what kind of a main impetus for this project was.
Can I make a note too, because I do live right there, and so I cross the bridge quite a bit. The mm-hmm. challenge is that curb is so high, and people just fly over that bridge, vehicular traffic, mm-hmm. that you get a lot of conflict with the bicyclists.
Yeah,
they're all on the sidewalk, which is probably wider than 4 feet because of the
bridge
parapet, but not 10 feet. And you know, people walking their kids and people walking with groceries, and it's just really, really unsafe.
Well,
and especially when they come around the corner, I mean, the bicyclists are. That's fabulous.
Yeah. So this would separate out. This is a concept from the study of separating out that traffic. And I experienced that with having a stroller.
Yes.
And especially this was the height of COVID. That picture was taken April 2nd, I believe. And so people were maintaining a very wide berth, which meant people were stepping into the street to go around us because I couldn't
get
take
off
them.
The streets. You know, because it's such a high thing.
Right.
Right. You can't take your stroller down there or jump your bike off.
Right. And so, again, utilizing what's already there, there's expansive bridge structure. It can be reimagined. The amount of traffic that's going between it is not, it doesn't necessitate a bridge that wide. And also other enhancements to the Hilliard Bridge and to the Clifton Lake Road Bridge as well. I think everyone is coming to Detroit because Clifton is very, very uncomfortable. So there's other recommendations for that bridge too.
Can I ask a question?
Process.
Maybe I'm missing things. The sidewalk extension, So that would be added onto the bridge?
It's on the existing deck.
It's already, okay, that's what I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then here's just a conceptual rendering of how that space can be utilized. If you've been to Columbus and seen some of the caps and things that they've put on the highways down there, you can kind of reclaim that space and make it much more interesting and walkable.
So the traffic squeeze then, so to speak, now this is an ODOT route?
This is.
Counts would support this kind of limitation?
That is what the study is looking at, the counts right now. We were, since COVID hit, obviously that impacted a lot of things, including counts. There are counts that were included in this project and the scope. And yeah, and so we're working through that right now just to verify that everything that's being portrayed is possible. But again, there's expansive pavement and lanes on this bridge. There's, just looking at it, you can see that there's opportunity.
Did that previous image show three, a width for three lanes on the bridge?
Hey, can we go back to that?
Is that a suicide lane?
Yeah, I mean, I know at the end you obviously are going to probably need your left turn lanes, mm-hmm. but I guess I just wonder if you could even skinny that up in the middle more.
Yeah.
Because, right, who's going to drive in that middle?
Well, and this was from a public meeting, these slides, and so we're still at kind of the earlier stages, midway through the project.
Or something, yeah, or even just make it.
Right. But there has to be data about, on that bridge, traffic data from.
Correct.
2 years ago, right?
Yes.
What does that say?
I don't know those numbers off the top of my head, but that was at our last steering committee meeting. Yeah. We talked extensively about going back through because there was a little bit of a hold on doing traffic counts because of COVID. There's adjustments that you can do on it, but going back through and getting some of the historical data on it as well. But that's going to refine these concepts because these were put out to the public in public meeting and they'll be tailored, you know, as more information. And just I would say the order of operations was a little affected just by COVID and some of the constraints that we had.
That's
great, though. Yeah. Great idea.
And so here we are in the process. This will probably bump out a little bit past November, but it will bump out a little past November. So that was the schedule kind of earlier on. Another study that's going to be coming up is the Cuyahoga County Lakefront Public Access Plan. This is Armin Budish, the county executive, had announced this last fall as an initiative of his administration looking to provide more and better access to the lakefront for the community. And they issued an RFP. Smith Group is going to be working on this project. They are just kind of kicking off right now, so this is more of a teaser of things to come. But this will also be coordinated in with NOAAC's Regional Lakefront Transportation Connection Study. They are doing this TLCI looking at the entire lakefront from Lorain County, Cuyahoga County, Lake County, and then the connections into the outlying counties that are beyond their planning area. But all of these will be layered in, as well as Cuyahoga Greenways. So more to come on this. I'm sure we'll probably do separate presentations on both of these in the coming months. But all good things to look forward to. And the main point being that we're trying to do very comprehensive planning, working across different agencies so that we are leveraging funds correctly and making sure that we're building things that connect and
getting things done. That just
Yeah, and the city of Cleveland's been active in that. The planning department's been great. So we're all in it together.
Can I ask a question that's maybe a little unrelated to this? The Greenway, where it stops at the bridge,
mm-hmm.
Is there any thought going into how we could hook onto the side of the bridge and get it all the way across to the end of the it crosses the transit bridge. Do you know where I mean? The question I have is there anything being done to just think about how we could attach onto the side of that bridge, or is that ridiculously complicated?
I'm not following which bridge you're talking about.
Yeah, the RTA bridge over the river.
Oh,
going beyond just an overlook point and making it to the other side, to infinity and beyond?
Well, for one, there's not funding for it, and we do not own that structure. It is RTA structure. We've talked about it just generally. We're not at that point right now.
No.
They had done some structural analysis on the bridge, and there's some ballast work that they're going to be doing over the course of the next year. But that remains to be determined. Certainly connectivity would be great, but we're not at that point yet.
Right, yeah.
Aspirational.
Right. Right.
Very good.
And that is the end, so. All right, well, thank you.
And before we go into the next one, I think it shows the level of complexity by which Cleveland Metro Parks works in many different municipalities, many different funding sources, including NOAACA, including the city, the county, the state, the feds. It's really a Rubik's cube of how to make these projects happen across the board. So it's what really happens is it's the benefit to the community of these trail connections and these enhancements across the way. So
and what we see is success breeds success, that old cliche. But I mean, these are things that are getting done now that people could have been talking about, did talk about, yeah, for years and years and years.
Well, last information item we have is the 2020 National Procurement Institute Achievement of Excellence Award. Cleveland Metro Parks was awarded for the 11th time overall, 10th consecutive award. What's really unique about this is that they had 188 successful applications, including 40 counties, 69 cities, 15 higher education agencies, 22 school districts, 34 special districts, 8 state or other agencies. Cleveland Metro Parks was one of only 2 agencies and only one of 34 special park districts in the United States and Canada to win the award. So congratulations to Bill, Charlie, Michelle, Becky, and the entire team. So kudos to them. Awesome. I do have one other item. This award, the 2020 Platinum Level E3 Encouraging Environmental Excellence. This is actually bestowed by the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency. Was actually supposed to be given in April, but obviously COVID hit. We just most recently received this. But it's really about environmental stewardship, improving social wellness. Now more than ever, this award really is being highlighted for what William Stinchbone's original vision was of part of this community. Now more than 24,000 acres. We are the first park district to receive this. It was one of the best applications we've ever seen. We were the only platinum one in Cuyahoga County. So our entire team should celebrate this.
Absolutely.
Wow. Fantastic.
So, yeah. And the commissioners, your sustainability policy was part of that award and application. So, I mean, Kirsten Trulio, Nancy Desmond, Jen Greiser, and Nancy Hughes, they were really the main leads on it. And it was outstanding work.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
I just wanted to add that in.
To everybody.
Super. That is all we have. There is no old business. The next regularly scheduled meeting is Thursday, November 19th. There is, what do we have?
We have an executive
session. We do have an executive session for real estate.
Okay.
The acquisition or purchase of real estate. Is there a motion for that?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Bruce Rinker.
Yes.
Debbie Barry.
Yes.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
So we are not adjourning yet. We will come back after executive session, but there will be no further business being conducted by the board subject to any vote. So we'll be back. We're back on the record. Thank you. So we've returned from executive session and with no further business, I would ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Take care.